at the intersection of information and entertainment. That's where you'll find Kello. News Talk 1320, 107.9, and Kello.com.
I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome to It's Your Business, the second hour of the Addiction and Recovery Show, and show 546 in our It's Your Business series. Our first It's Your Business show was in July 2010, and our question this hour, you have to think a little bit, if this is show 546 in the series, how many shows have we done in 2013? We'll give you the answer as the clock winds down, and the show hits 11 o'clock. So it surprised me when I went back and did the counting this morning. But this hour is important, very important. We're going to treat it as the most important hour. In hour one, Kevin Kirby, who helped found Tallgrass and more recently Face It Together, was joined at the microphone with Dennis Ford. I'm not sure who joined who. Doesn't matter. But they were both here talking and shared their stories. And they're both headed to Tallgrass right now. Both gentlemen are pretty much able to share their recovery stories. And as we listened, we were intent on what they have done for addiction, not only for their families, but for all of us, as to kind of show that they are examples. They're both recovering. And the recovery is the toughest during the holidays, when the temptations for drink and other risk are much more numerous. Toughest holidays, they tell us, Christmas to New Year's. And then if you believe Mark Cartwright, how about Halloween? Hence the reason we're doing 2 hours this morning. Now, Kevin and Dennis are back at Tallgrass. Well, if they haven't broken the speed limit, they're en route, probably sliding along. But they're out there doing something that's pretty important to this whole process. And what we're going to talk about this hour is mentoring. And that mentoring is something that has caught my fancy. And in this hour, Joan Swenson, Admissions Marketing Alliance with Tallgrass, Julie Schoolmeister, Executive Director, Face It Together, Sioux Falls. We're going to talk to four different people that are going to tell their stories. And if you will, why is it important that people tell their stories in the road to recovery?
I think it's really important that people share their stories just to personally. It's like you have a weight lifted off your shoulder when you are able to share it. One of the big tenets I think a lot of people learn in 12-step is that secrets keep you sick. And hanging on to that negativity or hanging on to those perceived shame or stigma that you have of yourself, it's so detrimental to your self-esteem. And when you can share your story and realize that you're not alone, it's a very powerful thing for that person. It's a very powerful thing for me individually. And I think that also in doing that, you connect with people and you help other people to realize, hey, you know what? I'm not alone. I can also talk about this. Or, you know what? Maybe it's time for me to go get some help. I think it's about interconnectivity. It's a real powerful thing to share your story.
The number that Kevin shared with us in the first hour is 1 out of 10, which means 20,000 in Sioux Falls affected. If you're thinking that you're odd, you're not odd. The fact that we do have people that are facing this kind of addiction, any kind of addiction you can imagine, and the fact that we're talking about it for 2 hours around a holiday that is a time that I think Dennis talked about as well, was the time of year that we have a lot of anniversaries of people that found themselves much like Joan.
Yep. Holiday season. And I think Dennis Ford said it pretty good. I mean, I know in my early 20s, I celebrated New Year's Eve a lot. That was the night that, well, of course, we went out all the time, but that was the big one. You went out and you saw your friends or whatever. And, you know, but for me, I know the holiday season was really, really tough. It was in the beginning of my recovery. It was tough. Trying to navigate waters that I had never done sober. How do you hang out with your family? What do you do? I mean, is my life over? That was a big thing. What am I going to do with myself? And there are so many other options out there to do that you don't involve drinking, you know, but you don't know that when you first get sober at all. I mean, you think that the only life that you've ever had is the only life there ever is. And that is not the truth. So when I got sober, it was actually this time right now, 6 years ago, I'm in treatment at Tallgrass, you know, so I didn't actually have to, you know, do holiday season other than so I could stay sober there. But it was the next year when I had a year that I went through my first holiday season sober. And it was kind of, it's nerve-wracking. So it's important that people know that it is possible to go through the holiday season without picking up any drink or drug, and that there are people there who can help you through that.
And those people are mentors. Why is that important?
The mentor, it's like a recovery coach. Those two people, those are kind of people that hold that reflection. They hold the mirror up to the person in recovery, and they say, okay, how are you going to get well? How are we going to find a pathway for you to get well? And I think if you don't have that sort of mentor, that recovery coach that can help guide the process, it's a lot easier to fall out of recovery. So I think the mentor, it's a great guide to have in your process.
I think it's important, too, though, that along with the mentoring, you know, and you were talking about secrets keep you sick. And, you know, we were taught in 12-step, and I'm sure, you know, you're taught that human connection that you need, the mirror that she's talking about. We all want to do this and kick this disease by ourselves. That is the thing that holds us back. I can do this. If I just do this, nobody needs to know. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we make that connection with other people. And part of our job, at least at Tallgrass, and then what you guys are doing with the recovery coaches, is that to be able to make that connection with somebody one-on-one so you don't feel so alone, okay, but that you know you can't do it by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to have guests that are going to be speaking in just a minute, but it's important that people, if they are feeling that maybe they're addicted to something, maybe they don't know, maybe they just need to talk to somebody. Yeah. Or if they know somebody that is, that they know how to reach you. They need websites. They need phone numbers. Ladies, share.
You can call Face It Together Sioux Falls at 605-274-2262. And our website is faceitsiouxfalls.org. And I also want to say that if you're someone who's kind of contemplating if you may or may not need help, talking to your doctor, talking to your primary care physician is also a really, really important thing to do.
How about for Tallgrass?
Tallgrass is 605-368-5559, and you can find us on the web at tallgrassrecovery.org.
All right, let's talk about our four guests. Can you share with us who they are, what they're going to tell us?
Well, our first one in the studio with us this morning is Tim Stroop. I hope I can use your last name.
Just too late now.
Blew your anonymity right out of the water. Tim's been with us before. His daughter, Megan, went through the program at Tallgrass, and I know that Tim is a... also in recovery. He's an advocate for people in recovery, getting into recovery, and that he helps out at Face It. He helps out at Tallgrass. He's just really happy to help anybody who's willing to, you know, and wants to get into recovery. So I thought it was important that he come today.
How about our other guests?
Okay, we got Jesse M. and Mike Parsley out there. Steve Williamson will also be joining us later in the hour. Jesse and Mike are both alumni of Tallgrass, and they have both been with us in one form or another on the show, and so we wanted to touch base with them a little bit.
And then Stephen also has a family recovery story.
Yeah,
nice
as well.
Stories that we have. And before the hour is up, we're going to talk a little bit to a gentleman about jobs that has helped a lot of people in this area that is number one as far as Google's concerned, as far as consulting on jobs. And we're happy that Russ Hoovendick is going to join us a little bit later in the hour. But, Tim, you drew the short straw. You're number one. You get to tee off first. If you will, you understand what we're trying to share. We're trying to share a story that people can understand you a little bit, where you were, where you want to go, and how it affected your family.
First of all, Bill, thank you very much. And just thank you. And I've seen an incredible light in your eyes. And thank you for doing this for Face It and for Tallgrass and for the community in whole, because this will only better everybody. And again, I share my experience, strength, and hope, because in my experience, hopefully, there's somebody out there that will identify with something that I said that will draw them closer to taking that step of recovery. And the other thing is, my hope is they can have hope. So that's why I share and I give my name. Using my last name is fine. I'm proud of that. And but anyway, as you know, I've shared with you before, my addiction started very young. I took my first drink at 8, and I know that I was an alcoholic by the age of 12. I mean, I didn't want to admit that, but we were drinking pretty much every weekend from 12 all the way through high school. Went to a high school in Sioux City where drinking wasn't condoned, but it wasn't condemned either. It was pretty much accepted. Our parents would tell us not to drink and how much harm it could bring, yet they continued to drink. Confusing message. But I grew up in a wonderful family. Went to college at the University of South Dakota. Played 4 years of football there. The drinking got worse. Experimented with some drugs. I liked those too. But alcohol was the least expensive way to go. So, but anyway, I did manage to graduate. I started experiencing blackouts in college and many times, waking up in different apartments, different dorm rooms, didn't know where you were, whose room you were in, how you got there, remembered nothing. There was a problem. But everybody did it. Everybody woke up in different rooms, didn't they? some of the people that lived in that room weren't there, so I know they had to be sleeping somewhere else, but... no, drinking was a problem. And then when football was out of my life, I had this huge void in my life. And I just filled that void with more bad habits, drinking, drugs, and went through one marriage. And then I met my wife, who's my wife still to this day, by the grace of God. We had a couple children. The drinking still continued. I promised, I swore, I can't tell you how many times that I would quit. Because when she had a baby, our son Josh, who just turned 24 a few days ago, she said, enough is enough. I'm done. You're going to be done. Well, okay. I promise I won't do it anymore. Well, that didn't happen. We got married very young. Well, she was young. She was 24, 25, and I was 30. So this continued another 8 years. The last 8 years of my addiction was methamphetamine. I believe it to be Satan himself. It'll take everything you have, every dime, every person, and just destroy it. I did everything possible to get it. I would steal. I was a thief. I was a liar. I was a cheat. I was all of that. My wife had had enough, and she had asked me to leave the house. And the pride in me still thought I could do it myself or... I'll show you or I'll handle this type of pride. And I left the house. But she had told me, when you're ready to come home, really come home and make a change, you can come home. And it was a couple weeks. It took me a couple weeks out there in homeless with people that I thought were friends, but they seemed to all disappear when I didn't have... the dope on me and no place to stay. I was staying in my car. I would stay at somebody's place once and a couple nights, but they got tired of me too. But anyway, I came home and I told her I was ready to make a change. And I went to bed high, had been drinking, and I was high on methamphetamine and I was high on marijuana. And I laid there and I can remember like it was yesterday. I just prayed. I prayed, Lord, you need to save me. I said, Jesus, you need to come into my life and you need to change me because I cannot live like this. And I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning and I was clean and sober. It was like I'd never used a thing. No withdrawals, I wasn't sleeping. I was wide awake. I knew that I met Jesus Christ that night. And from there, it hasn't been easy. I'll never tell you it's been easy. There's still trials, but now I have a hope. And it wasn't till about a year ago that my daughter actually encouraged me to go to a big book study group. And I started there, and then I started going to some meetings. All I could do is want to give this thing that I found. I wanted to give it to somebody else that was suffering like I was. And it's been an incredible journey. Like I said, still trials, but now I can walk through them with a clear, sane mind. And it's been a wonderful journey, and I can't wait to see what God does this next 10 years in Sioux Falls. And I just have one other thing to say that's really been placed on my heart. Face It Together is a wonderful organization. Tallgrass is a wonderful organization. But without the people, the church is a wonderful organization. But without the people, those are just four walls. Without the Julies, the Jones, the Kevins, the Daves, the Dans, the Carries, the Marys, the Christies, all the people, the Shelleys, the Daves in this world, those are the people that are in the trenches. Those are the people that are on the front lines that are giving their lives daily. Those places are only places without the people. So you got to love these guys. They just want to give their life away so somebody else can have a better life. So my hats are off to them. I love them, and I will always love them, and I will direct people to them if I can't help them, because I know someone who can.
Tim Stroop with his story, and as we get Jesse in place, and we're going to share four stories in this hour, we need Joan and Julie to please share the information. If people have questions about addiction, if they feel that they are facing an addiction now or know somebody that is, you want them to call and you can talk.
They can call us at Tallgrass at 605-368-5559, or they can find us on the web at tallgrassrecovery.org.
You can call Face It Together Sioux Falls at 605-274-2262, or our website is faceitsiouxfalls.org.
All right. Great story from Tim, but we do need to save time for all four stories. So if you will, introduce us to Jesse.
This is Jesse, who has come to join us this morning to tell us a little bit about his experience, strength, and hope. He's an alumni from Tallgrass as well, and it's got to be close to 3 years now.
Getting close, yeah.
Yep. First group I ever worked with when I started working out there, so they burned their memory of them in my soul, I would have to say. But Jesse has been kind enough to join us this morning.
Hi, Jesse. Would you mind sharing with us your story, keeping in mind that our audience is looking for hope? Mm-hmm. They're looking for somebody that maybe they can look to that can mentor them.
Well, definitely. Well, it's a pleasure to be here today. Like Joan said, it's coming up on 3 years now. I came to Tallgrass March of 2011, a broken, scared, sick man. I started drinking regularly when I was 14 years old. I had tasted alcohol before that, but I first started, normally drinking when I was 14. I was having trouble adjusting to a new surrounding. I'd moved from across the state, so I was having trouble adjusting, and I was introduced to alcohol and immediately loved it. I knew right away that the feeling it gave me, the happiness, the warmth, all the problems went away. And so I decided then and there that I was gonna use that as much as I could. So, I always consider it kind of a normal high school existence, drinking on the weekends. But looking back, it wasn't normal. I found people who drank like I drank right away, hung out with them. I thought it made me popular, thought it made me cool. And I used that as an excuse to drink. And throughout high school and college, that was my crutch. Drugs are also part of my story, but, you know, alcohol is the one that took me down. So, like I said, I started drinking when I was 14, continued to drink through college heavily. I was the one who could outdrink people, you know. I was always the last one up, drink the most, drink the fastest. Get out of college, and looking back, I can see that the problem was there. Like, I needed to stop, but at that point, I had no intentions, no recollection that I could be an alcoholic. Our first son was born in 2004. I had quit drinking for a couple months just to kind of sympathize with my wife because she couldn't drink. She's a normal drinker, by the way, so... but she wasn't drinking, so I decided not to. And I kind of patted myself on the back for that because I could go that couple months without drinking. And it kind of eased some tension in my mind about what I was doing. Shortly after that, though, you know, I picked it back up. And my wife at the time she worked for a nonprofit in town, and she was on the road a lot. And so the drinking went from maybe Friday and Saturday night to Wednesday, Thursday, and pretty soon I was drinking seven nights a week, drinking every day. In 2008, our daughter was born, and that's pretty much where my life was really starting to go downhill. Looking back at it, I could see, even at that point, my life was kind of falling apart. I remember, since it's New Year's Eve today, New Year's Eve, my daughter was already one. My son was four. I woke up, you know, New Year's Eve was always a great time for us alcoholics because you can drink as much as you want and nobody pays attention to it because everyone else is drinking too. So I always looked forward to that day. But I remember getting up 6 o'clock on New Year's Day, and that was the last thing I remember until the next day, waking up with my wife looking at me, you know, disgusted. Had no idea what I had done. Didn't remember anything from the whole 24 hours previously. And, you know, she kind of did a play-by-play for me, and it was embarrassing to hear. So I resolutely, you know, made an oath that day I was going to quit drinking on my own, and I don't need it. I can quit. So I didn't drink for 4 months after that. Started seeing a psychiatrist because I was angry. And I thought, you know, I thought it was just the anger I had to deal with, not the drinking. As soon as I stop being angry, I'll quit drinking. It didn't help. I became more and more angry, more and more. I don't know what the word. I was just angry. I saw people laughing and smiling. I just became instantly upset and wanted to drink. That's all I wanted to do because they were happy. I was not. So after about 4 months, we kind of had this talk. You know, hey, you know, I did it 4 months. I can go back. I'll do it slow this time. I'll drink normally. I'll drink one beer, then one water. And it lasted for about 2 weeks that way. And I was right back to the races, sneaking beers when left and right, hiding stuff. And, excuse me, you know, it was like I didn't take that 4 months off at all. I immediately picked up right where I left off. And that's when I knew pretty much when it started coming into my mind that I can't stop. It didn't take long because I was drinking constantly, basically. It, you know, got to the point probably a couple years before I quit, or before I went to Tallgrass, that I was hiding. You know, I would, once a week would be my clean out the closet day, where I'd open my closet and clean all the empty bottles of wine I'd be hiding or of the vodka I was hiding. And it was always so ironic when I was doing it. I was like, this is not normal. Normal people don't clean their closets out once a week and have 18, 25 bottles of wine sitting in there. Normal people don't have to do this. Normal people aren't taking money from their children's piggy banks to buy bottles of vodka. Normal people aren't spending money that they should on food and other necessities to drink. But I couldn't stop, and I didn't know what to do. My wife saw the problem. She kept asking me, why do I drink so much? I said, I don't know. You know, I think she read the Big Book before I even picked it up. I had friends reach out to me, friends from church who are in recovery, who'd been through Tallgrass, through AA, who wanted the help, and I just rejected them left and right.
Jesse, we're going to stop the story. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and you tell us how you got on the right road. Okay. All a part of It's Your Business on this New Year's Eve day. Well, the song kind of reminds us it's New Year's Eve day, and this is the third of four half hours that we're talking about addiction. We had Kevin Kirby and Denny Ford from Face It Together in Tallgrass in the first hour. We're telling stories, testimonials in this hour. Jesse was in the middle of his. And Jesse, if you will, share where you went from there.
All right. Well, yeah, towards the end of the year in 2010, it was to the point where I couldn't think straight. I didn't know what to do. You know, everything was confusing. I was angry. I was confused. I was shut off from my family. I was resentful towards everyone. You know, and I started to really question if it was all worth it, honestly, this pain, because I didn't want the pain anymore. I didn't want the lies. I didn't want the suffering. But I didn't know what to do. My dad's in recovery, and the answer was right there in front of me. I didn't want that even. You know, like I said, people had reached out to me and I didn't want it. I didn't want to change. Kind of the way it went, you know, I have a good wife who is very strong when I couldn't be. And she stayed on me to do something about it. I tried outpatient and that didn't work for me. I drove past a liquor store every day and that was not going to work. So, you know, we had visited Tallgrass prior to me going into outpatient because I had said the biggest mistake of my life at that point was like, I need help. And my wife says, I'm going to stick to it. You know, I'm going to hold you to that. And so we went and visited Tallgrass and I said, no thanks, that's prison. And well, they didn't, no TV, no music, you know, it's not that bad. And I said, no way. And I didn't want to change. So I talked her into outpatient. And that was the biggest mistake of my life, the biggest lie. I told it to that point, you know, that I can do it through outpatient. And so that was 8 weeks of more lying, more drinking, going to AA meetings because I had to, drunk, just embarrassing things. And, you know, I got caught drinking in the outpatient program. So my wife started kicking me out. She kicked me out once. I had to spend the night on a friend's couch and I got good and drunk before I did that. And then I had another time I had to go live with my parents for a week, which was pretty humbling for a 34-year-old man to go home to mom and dad. And I drank through all of that too and got back home saying, I'm good and sober. I've seen the light and all that, knowing I hadn't. And, you know, it was only probably a few days after that on a Sunday I got drunk again and she found out and she said, enough's enough. And I was, the way I got caught, you know, I don't know how, I never would have let it happen, but I did, and I'm happy that I did, because I think at that point I realized it's over. She said, you get help or you get out and don't come back. And that wasn't, you know, as much as I hated my life at that point, I knew that wasn't what I wanted in life. I did not want to live on the streets. I did not want to be the stereotypical alcoholic, you know. So I called Tallgrass that day. And, or I think I did. I don't remember. I was drunk, honestly. My wife may have called and, you know, talked to Bob and talked to Dan out there. And they got me in that night. Woke up the next day in a bed I don't remember getting into, really. Scared out of my mind. Knew I didn't want to be there. I wanted to leave right away, but I knew I couldn't. I had nothing to go back to, you know. And a guy that I was in the room at that time, it was his last day there, he basically talked me into saying, to give it a week, you know, and I said, okay, I can. And the first week was the longest week of my life. I couldn't eat. I didn't sleep very well. But after that, I kind of came out of the fog and started hearing what people were saying to me. The awesome thing about Tallgrass is, you know, first of all, the staff is all in recovery as well. So they're a good resource to turn to. But then the people that come out day in and day out and share, you know, I started hearing my story being told from young people to old people to people I never thought I'd relate to. Started hearing that, and it made all the difference in the world. I knew there was hope. They showed me hope. They showed me there is a way out, that I can live a productive life as an alcoholic. And I don't have to be drinking to do it. That was the big thing at the point was, at that time was I couldn't see myself down the road having a fun life without drinking. I never thought that was possible. And that was, I could never be more wrong thinking that. If someone's thinking there's no way to live life without alcohol, they're wrong. There is a way.
Quite the story from Jesse. And this is the time of year that we have been told so many people are affected, that the alcohol steps in, and we want to be able to use as much time as we can for the testimonials. So if you will, we took a little longer version last hour, but pick out three or four of these that people should consider where they can enjoy New Year's Eve and not go too far.
Sure. Well, just think about asking a friend to be on call for you, to check in with you during any event. If you think you might need some additional support, just have them text or call you at a certain time just to touch base.
And if you're trying to avoid explaining why you're not drinking, have something in your hand. It's very important to have something in your hand so you don't feel like you don't fit in or people think that you need to have something to drink.
And if you're going to an event, just drive separately so that way you have your own car. And if you feel like it's time to go, then you can go. You don't have to worry about it.
Mike has come in. He is going to tell us story number three. I've known Mike for a long time.
Morning, Bill.
Good morning to you. We are sharing stories today with the thought that New Year's, Christmas time is a tough time where people have a lot of temptation with different addictions. In your particular case, we're happy that you're sitting here today. Could have gone the other way, though, couldn't it?
Very easily. It very easily could have gone the other way. I had a very good life. The disease hit me late in life. I was in my late 50s when the disease struck. And up until then, it was not an issue. Alcohol was not an issue for us. But then fear of failure, fear of money issues, thought I had failed as a man, thought I had failed as a provider for my family. And the truth was I hadn't. I wasn't alone in what happened to us. But the solution that I found was alcohol. And it got to the point where I had lost my power of choice. I couldn't not drink. Fortunately for me, my family stepped in, and I remember the day. It was August 1st of 2012. The kids stepped up and...
Kind of an intervention.
Yep. They blindsided me and my wife. And the next day, August 2nd, I was in Tallgrass. They basically said, there's a problem and you need to get it fixed. And of course I denied it. I saw it as a sign of failure that I couldn't control it, that I couldn't fix it. And the fact is I couldn't fix it, not alone. And that's where I'm glad I found Tallgrass. The program they have out there is a great start on the recovery journey. And life just gets better. If you think it can't, even at my age, and I had a great life, and today it's head and shoulders above where it was. I'm just in awe every morning when I get up that I've been blessed with a family that I have, with the people around me, the friends that I've got, the people that are that support me in everything I do. It's absolutely amazing. Every morning, I just thank God that I'm able to be up and an active participant in it.
You're helping people today, too, correct?
Yes, trying to.
Now, I've heard your voice on recent commercials for Tallgrass.
Yes.
Soliciting, telling the story, doing the ask.
When I went to Tallgrass, fortunately for me, they have a scholarship program. And that was a major part of me getting into treatment there. The financial help that I received was exactly what I needed, exactly when I needed it. And since then, and I've even donated to the scholarship fund, it's a way for me to pay back the gift I've been given and to make that gift available to other people in our community that can use the help, and they can then have the chance to experience a greater life than they've ever dreamed of. And it doesn't take much. I mean, $5, $10, $15, $20, $50. But every dollar goes directly to help someone get into the program, to get into recovery, a treatment center like Tallgrass, and get a start on this journey. And it's an amazing journey. It's a lot of fun.
You know, I guess knowing you before, if somebody told you that you would be a person that had an addiction, you'd probably say, me?
I said, you're nuts. Never
well,
happened.
You would have said that anyway about me.
Yes, I would have.
But if we told you that 1 out of 10 people that are adults do have an addiction, you'd say, it's not that unusual.
No, that's not that unusual. 1 out of 10. Yeah. I'd say that's about right.
So what Sioux Falls is doing with Tallgrass, with Keystone, with Face It Together, with the programs, tells you that there are people that care. You can get up out of the deep, which is one of the things that you described when you and I talked about it.
Yeah.
To where you are today, to where you're feeling better about yourself.
Yeah, I'm of value. I'm of value. And I had lost sight of that. I thought I had failed, therefore I had put my value of how I saw myself in what I was doing. And I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I didn't know how not to. I couldn't control it. No way, shape, or form. And doing it alone did not work. I needed help. And there's help out there. And you don't need to be embarrassed about it. And it's just, it's a disease. And it's, you know, the unfortunate thing is somebody gets cancer, everybody feels sorry for them, and what can we do to help? But there seems to be a stigma about alcoholism that, oh, you can control this. All you have to do is decide you can do it. Well, no, you can't. Not when the disease is blowing.
Well, and our hope with this two-hour show today is that to let you know it's not uncommon. You're not that unusual. If you want to be unusual, yeah, you can think you're unusual 1 out of 10. But there are a lot of people that have an addiction that need some help, that need to call. And who should they call?
You can call Face It Together Sioux Falls at 605-274-2262 or visit our website at faceitsiouxfalls.org.
Tallgrass's number is 605-368-5559, or you can reach us at the website tallgrassrecovery.org.
And we do want to bring in Russ Hoovendick with Directional Motivation. His staffing site has become number one on Google, and his frequency on our show didn't hurt him when our friends at KSFY talked to him and put him on television last night about the urgency to find a job for the 1.3 million who lost their unemployment benefits over the weekend. Russ, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
That was a kind of a long sentence, wasn't it?
It was. I don't know if I captured all that, but it's kind of good.
There you go. And if you're unemployed, lost your benefits, and have addictions, as we're talking about in this hour, and you've developed those addictions during military time, it can be even tougher.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. And this is always a really difficult time for individuals, whether they're military or civilian, you know, for that matter, because of the struggles. And you know, there's a certain amount of frustration and depression that goes into play when people aren't finding the opportunities they're looking for, and they start to blame themselves a lot of times and turn inward rather than outward. And one of the things we do is really encourage that they seek the support in a number of different ways. And just like on your program earlier, you know, reaching out and really acknowledging that you do have an issue. And it's not uncommon for people to have issues.
Russ Hoovendick, directionalmotivation.com. Now, we said you're the number one staffing site, which means there's another way that they can reach you that we haven't even shared.
Yeah, we really haven't talked about that. Our staffing agency is Client Staffing Solutions, and we have our Directional Motivation site as well, which is a site that we created just to help people in their career search. So there's all types of interviewing tips, tools. There's audios, videos, worksheets, all kinds of resources that way. And then we have our staffing agency, which is we work nationwide, which is Client Staffing Solutions. And we actually use the same number for both companies because they're so integrated.
Well, it's an important factor right now, and we do know people are needing work. They may be underemployed, unemployed, and they're looking at it a little different. One of the headlines I saw in print and also heard via television last night is that they're looking at jobs a little different with the fact that there aren't the benefits there. And that's the time they start saying, this Russ may have what we need to get started.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we do is really strong in the area of counseling and getting people to take a different perspective on what their situation currently is. And I guess really in a lot of ways providing optimism that maybe they don't have right now. And just taking a new approach, taking a new assessment, and taking a new, seeing it through a different lens, so to speak.
Well, the one thing that I want to do with you, Russ, as we have with some of the other guests we've had on the show, I want to link you with Face It Together and mm-hmm. with Tallgrass, because, you know, they're trying to help some people that are fighting addiction. They're trying to recover, and there are employers out there, as Kevin Kirby mentioned in the first hour, 26, 28, whatever the number is in Sioux Falls right now, that have come together with others expected to join in 2014, that understand that people have problems and that you improve the bottom line if you take care of your employees.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've always prided ourselves on the fact that we view ourselves as problem solvers. And so when people say, boy, I don't know if I want to give them a call and share that we actually have a problem, no, that's fine. That's what we deal with. We are problem solvers, whether it be on the individuals themselves or whether it be companies, you know, looking for their staffing needs and things like that. We are problem solvers. So we encourage people to reach out to us.
And there is no charge, which is an important factor, particularly if you don't have a job and you're looking for a better one.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. How do they reach you again, Russ?
Give us a call. Our number is 605-362-8176. And my personal extension is 101. They can also go to our website, which is directionalmotivation.com, or they can go to our staffing site, which is Client Staffing Solutions.
And congratulations on being number one on the Google site.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is, but what you're doing is good for our community. Russ, we appreciate you.
Yep, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks, Bill.
You bet. We are in our home stretch now, and we have a chance to do a little roundtable, which is going to give us a chance to discuss where we're at, where we're going, what we need. Sitting across from me, we have Mike, who is a friend, who didn't think he'd be sitting in here talking on the radio, though he has a little radio background, he told me. Not surprised about that. And I think Julie told me she had a little radio background. Joan, I'm sorry, you don't have any radio background, but you're good enough that you could have a radio background if you want it. But we have talked serious business today. We've talked about the fact that 1 out of 10 have addictions in Sioux Falls. What we heard from Denny Ford and we heard from Kevin Kirby is we're going to do more in 2014. to each of you. And we'll start with my good friend, Julie. What do you want us to do in 2014 to make sure the message gets out and we help more people?
I think the number one thing we can all do is just keep communicating, you know, keep the dialogue open. We have a lot of momentum going, I think, right now. We've done a lot of work this year in raising awareness and, you know, bringing up the conversation, not being afraid to talk about it. Themes that keep being interwoven into the dialogue. We talk about stigma and we talk about shame and we talk about the fear that this disease brought to all of our lives. You know, we talk about not having worth. You know, we feel like we're not worth anything. Not the case, you know. There can be a better life, there can be a fun life, and we need to keep talking about that to raise the self-esteem and to make people realize that we do get well and that we do recover. I think from a Face It Together standpoint, in 2014, we just want to keep growing. We want to add more employers to the employer initiative because that is going to help us affect change in more people's lives. It's going to help us get more people well, get more people into long-term recovery. And, you know, just help us achieve our mission. You know, our mission, it's pretty simple, to get people who suffer from the disease of drug and alcohol addiction well. You know, our vision is to be a community that has solved the disease of drug and alcohol addiction. And we're just going to keep working hard and keep talking and trying to do that in 2014.
Joan, from your side, we heard Denny say earlier, 131, and he said not to use the word patience. I can use the word recovery, but I can't use the word patience.
No, because we're not clinical or medical, we don't call them patients. We call them guests, as they are. They are guests of our facility. They are there by their own accord, you know, so they're guests to us. And so please don't call them patients. That makes us sound like we're a hospital or something, which we are not. 2014. Well, if I had my way, I'd have a lot more jazz hands and excitement and parties and just shouting from the rooftops that we do recover. Dennis would tell me that I need to keep it a little more realistic and to keep trudging forward. We are only a small facility. We have 3 sober homes. We won't be getting any more. We're not going to be growing expansion campus-wise. But like Julie said, we're going to keep talking because it's important that people know that we do recover. We're going to have some fun events this year. We're not going to talk about those today either. But, you know, keep your ears and your eyes open. I think it's important. And as long as we keep telling people that we do recover, the Mikes, the Me's, the Julies, the Kevins, the Dennises, the Jessies, we keep that, like you said, that dialogue open, then more people can get help that they need.
Say, and if I can just piggyback on what Joan was talking about, you know, I think we need to remember, too, that there has been so much change affected mm-hmm. in people's lives, whether it's through Tallgrass or through the Sober Living Homes or through Face It Together in Sioux Falls. And we're really lucky that we live in a community in which people can, you know, live in a sober home, live in a neighborhood, and start to put their lives back together. There's a lot of places that aren't accepting of that, and I think it's really fortunate that we live in a community that has been more accepting of that, and we appreciate that.
Mike, from your end, having had a chance to visit with these ladies and the other people that have given their testimony today, being a part of all that you are, how are you going to spread the word about that there is help?
Don't be afraid. You know, sometimes the phone can get really, really heavy. To open a door, you don't have to knock. You can just walk right in. The help is there, and it's getting past that fear and the shame is the big thing. And know that you're not alone. You're not alone in this journey. And that's what it is. It's a journey. And it can be an awful lot of fun. And the rewards, you can't even fathom the rewards you're going to get from this. But you've got to get past that initial fear of picking up the phone or going out to visit. Go talk to somebody. There's a myriad of places that can get you in the right direction, get you started in the right direction. And everybody is ready to help. I know just from my experience at Tallgrass, it's like going home. They gave me an opportunity to live again. They showed me hope that I had lost. How else can I say it? I got a new lease on life. I got another chance.
Well, we appreciate everybody with their testimony today, but we do have one other piece of business that we promised when we started the show. We mentioned at the top of the show that it was It's Your Business Show 546, and we are going to mention why here in a second. Our first show was in July of 2010, right after the 4th of July. So how many shows have we done this year? We've done 288 shows. We've had a cake for 300. We've had a cake for 400. We've had a cake for 500, which I never got a piece of because I had to go do business, so I missed the cake. But what it does show is that we have room to talk about addiction. We have room to talk about helping the community. And with 26 businesses, 28 businesses, with all the testimonials that are out there, one in 10 having an addiction, there's room for us to talk addiction in this show. There's room for us to be a conscience with the community and say, you can help. There's room for us to say, it's New Year's Eve, enjoy it, have fun, but don't make it an amateur night.